America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like,
whatever, dude.
Hey! Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand. You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
Thanks to the progress we've made, I can say tonight that we are on track to complete all of America's military objectives shortly, very shortly. We're going to hit them extremely hard over the next 2 to 3 weeks. We're going to bring them back to the Stone Ages, where they belong. In the meantime, discussions are ongoing. Regime change was not our goal. We never said regime change, but regime change has occurred because of all of their original leaders' death. They're all dead. The new group is less radical and much more reasonable. Yet if during this period of time no deal is made, we have our eyes on key targets. If there is no deal, we are going to hit each and every one of their electric generating plants very hard and probably simultaneously. We have not hit their oil, even though that's the easiest target of all, because it would not give them even a small chance of survival or rebuilding. But we could hit it, and it would be gone, and there's not a thing they could do about it.
You ever heard of Donald Trump? That's a great question to walk into a party and say. Hey, this is Wiggins America. Welcome to it on Easter weekend. Glad that you're here. We're going to talk about a little bit of news, Christian stuff with Jaden Ivey here just in a minute. And we got a lot to hit. I mean, this has been a very, very busy week. Sometimes I like kind of goofing around a little bit more, but we have lots of news items. So we're going to hit them all in this hour. But first, let's talk about Trump and let's talk about Iran. We had a little debate on the Annie Fry show this week that speech that he gave was not really necessary. And I disagreed. I thought that it was. I think that part of what he was doing was not addressing our nation. He was addressing the nations. You know, because he tweets and does media and stuff so much. He just says so much that you're like, well, what's the goal here? What's the plan? And I think he kind of like pushed away everything, gave an address, and said, here's the plan. But markets reacted negatively to it because it's not necessarily an immediate drawdown. He put a timeline on it of 2 to 3 weeks. But in that 2 to 3 weeks, I mean, it could be pretty severe still. He's talking about bombing infrastructure and stuff. So, you know, it's still like, well, what's going to happen? We don't know. But I do think that we saw a little bit more of the plan. And we are not, it sounds to me like we're not going to be there long term. And that's the goal. So I'm a fan of that. I'm glad to hear that. I'm not opposed to the action that we've taken, but I would be opposed to sort of being in charge like we were in Afghanistan forever. I don't think that he wants that either. But I think that he has let us know that that's not the plan. So, just a little bit more on Iran. But nothing earth-shattering. I mean, this has been the plan, right? All right, now transitioning to the Jaden Ivey stuff.
Wow, Wiggins America.
Well, going into Easter, a big cultural milestone happened in relation to where we are as a nation. Are we a Christian nation or are we not? We have been in the past. I would argue to some extent we are still in ways, but that's a tough question just to say yes or no to anymore. I think there's been tremendous movement in the right direction in the last few years, couple years. But when this thing with Jaden Ivey pops up from the Chicago Bulls, it does make you do a double take and you go, oh, if the major institutions of your nation and something like entertainment is such a barometer for the culture, because all they want to do is just make money. They don't want to cause waves. They want to just exist and make money, or at least that is usually the point. Maybe you get some activists in there every now and then. But with the Chicago Bulls firing Jaden Ivey, cutting him, not for any reason related to basketball or anything on the court or even really off the court other than just his biblical views on sexuality, He made a statement about it, and they fired him. I mean, they cut the guy based on his, I'm not even going to say his views, because they're not really his views. They're just biblical views on sexuality. Homosexuality, of course, is what we're talking about, if you haven't seen the story. I'm going to play a clip here from him talking about this and just how ludicrous it really is. And I'm going to hesitate to like get angry and be like, screw the Bulls and all that stuff. I did feel that way, but I want to talk about this more intellectually than that. Here's Jaden Ivey.
My conduct was not detrimental to the team. That is a lie. Amen. I was a good teammate to those around me. I was a good teammate on the floor. I made the right plays. I did exactly what the coach asked me to do on a daily basis. Whatever was needed, whatever was required of me to do, I was willing. Right? And so my conduct was not detrimental to the team. It's strictly because I spoke the truth of the word of God and was preaching the gospel.
So he has biblical views on sexuality when this one was specific to homosexuality. And that is deemed irredeemable, basically. That is the Bulls saying you cannot exist in this society and hold those views. That's what they're saying. It's a major institution saying that. And of course, there are many of us who disagree with that. In fact, I would venture to say the majority of Americans disagree with firing somebody over that. So they've really screwed up here. But they represent a large contingency of the country which says, you cannot disagree with me and exist. You have to be banished from society. You cannot work. You cannot make money. You cannot do and participate in anything that I participate in. If you are going to hold those views, you will be punished. And it's biblical views. And I'll take it in this direction, because there's lots of ways that we could approach this. But if you have a problem with the Bible's views on sexuality, I hesitate to say welcome to the club, because I don't. But it's a fight. If you are a Christian, you have probably fought with the Word of God in some regard. You've probably had scriptures that you get mad at for whatever reason. I'm not talking about just culturally with homosexuality. Like, that's the big one in our culture right now, that our culture just says no, or at least a portion of our culture says no, I will not accept that portion of the Word of God. In fact, I don't believe in God, and I don't believe in any of that. It's all wrong. I am better than it. And that view is cultural, but that view is also very personal. So while I may not have any major view or problems with some of the cultural stuff that other people do with the Bible, like homosexuality, I have problems with the Bible all the time. I fight God a lot. And I was just talking about this with my wife the other day. She said, I think you probably wrestle with God more than you don't. And I said, that's probably true, because I will just come across something that's either in the Word of God, as in the Bible, or something that I feel like I have been led into by Him. And, testing whatever I feel that leading according to the Bible, too. And sometimes you don't have any specifics in the Bible that tell you, like, oh, you're supposed to invest over here or something like that. You know, you're not going to find that specific thing in the Bible. But, you know, it's a general guideline. And I'll do what I feel like he's telling me to do. And it just doesn't go the way that I thought it would if I followed God. And there's other scriptures that I just fight. I just fight against him. And I'm going to tell you that I think that as long as you're pursuing him, that is all fine. The problem is when the Word of God conflicts with your views and you decide, I'm better than it, I know better than God, you've lost. I mean, you're just not going to win. You're not going to go anywhere with that, because God is God. I mean, you're not going to beat him. What do you think? So instead of thinking that way, we tend to go, well, then I just don't believe him at all. I don't have even any faith at all that he exists. And that's a nice way to sort of like sanction that off and move along. But ultimately, addressing those things, I think, is the way to do it. And I am chief among people who just fight with God all the time. And I don't know. I just thought that was like an interesting way to approach the Jaden Ivey thing. He's obviously got a huge, he's got this sort of millstone attached to him for the rest of his life now. And it's so sad. It's so bad. And I just really pray that we can get back to a place of actual free speech and not free speech if I agree with you.
America.
All right, I was finally able to go into the Mark Cox Morning Show, do my Tuesday morning hit that I do on that show at 8:30, and it has been, let's see, I think 3 or 4 weeks since I've actually been in studio to do it. I like to be in studio as often as I can. Once in a while, I'll have to do it on the phone because there's just something else going on or whatever. But last week, I was on the phone for that segment. And I told Mark this after the fact. I didn't tell him while it was happening. But after the fact, I said, dude, last week when I was on the phone with you doing my hit, and I can't remember the subject we were talking about. This week we talked about property taxes and the ridiculous nature of the way that they tax unrealized gains. But we'll get to that in a second. But the week before, I was on the phone and I was standing in the most awkward position while I was on the phone. And I didn't tell anybody this because I didn't want it to become the point of the segment or anything. But I was standing with 1 foot up on like the third stair and the other one down 3 stairs lower. So where you can picture I'm standing up like almost like you'd be in a gallop, like way up high. And I did the whole segment standing like that on the phone because I was in such incredible pain trying to pass a kidney stone that I thought, if I sit down, I'm in pain. If I just stand normal or try to pace around while I talk, which is the most natural way, I'm in pain. So I'm going to stand in this weird position and do that whole segment, which I did. So I told Mark that, and he was like, I thought he'd laugh, and he was like, bro, dude, that's rough. You don't have to do the thing. I'm like, I know, but it's been a couple weeks. So anyway, this week, finally back in studio, and got to talk about this topic, which is near and dear to my heart, which is property taxes.
Wow, Wiggins America.
But you're dealing with property tax issues in the state of Florida, right?
Yeah, there's been a big argument that actually was spearheaded by DeSantis. I mean, it's not like other people were talking about it and then DeSantis took it up. I think he originated this argument.
He did.
Which is that property taxes in general are not illegal, but taxing people on unrealized gains is very legally dubious. I'm not sure whether it's fully illegal or not. It hasn't really been tested very much.
Right.
But you don't tax people on unrealized gains on their investments with stocks or anything else. But for whatever reason, we've decided in this country, it's okay if you bought a house for $100,000 that's now worth $300,000.
In the eyes of somebody.
In the eyes of whoever. Yeah. The government, mm-hmm. assessors, they come in and go, I think it's worth this, and we're going to tax you based on that. Well, they don't know that. They just know that you paid $100,000 for that house in 1995 or even 2005 or whatever it was. So they tax you based on unrealized gains. The only area of our economy where you can do that, although Democrats are trying really hard to add that to other areas of the economy, they've been unsuccessful so far.
Yep.
So that's the big argument that DeSantis has made. Here is practically the way this is playing out in Florida, though, because it's not quite addressing that issue. Which is why this is a good step forward, but it's not really quite addressing it in the way that you'd hope. The Florida House has passed a bill now, 80-30, so overwhelmingly, that they are going to eliminate property taxes for everybody who is living in their house, a homesteader. You know, you own your house, you live in it. So not investment property.
Yeah.
Which is okay. I mean, I understand that a lot of people are like, well, we don't want to help investors here. A lot of investors like me are not big investors, though. We would love to see a benefit from that. But I understand if you're not want to help the investor class. However, it doesn't really address that original argument of that they were originally making of unrealized gains. Secondly, the bill that just passed through the Florida House also doesn't exempt you from school taxes, which, as you know, is the bulk
of most
of
property
your
taxes.
Property taxes.
That's right. Yep.
Now, they have to do this incrementally. I understand that because you can't eliminate all money from all your schools. So they have to do this in a way that doesn't just collapse every local government. But it's not really addressing their original argument. So while it's a step in the right direction, it's not quite what I'd like to see it be yet.
And in Missouri, you also would have to overcome the fire and EMS law, because right now they're exempt from any tax break or tax incentive. So Chapter 100s, you know, Chapter 303s, whatever the tax incentives are, you still have to pay all of your EMS and fire and police property taxes in those cases. You do get exempted from the school tax if you get one of those breaks. But if you try to do that in Missouri, I'm sure that the lobby group in Jeff City would say, hey, our exemption still applies. You still have to pay us.
They would.
I got to tell you, I'm an Illinois resident, and I have watched Missouri bungle things for a long time. A Republican government that didn't seem to use any of its power
right.
for anything until now. And I don't know if it's Kehoe who's actually like, yeah, let's do it, or who is spearheading this thing, but I am really happy to see a lot of these things moving forward in Missouri.
Redistricting being number one.
Yeah. Now, the one thing, we kind of got off on a tangent after that, and we started talking about local Missouri stuff, which I was actually glad to hear about, because he was telling me stuff I didn't really know that was going on in Missouri, like that there are, well, I've seen, I guess, a little bit of this. I'm just not steeped in local state politics in Missouri as much as I am in Illinois. But they're trying to get rid of the income tax in Missouri, and I think it's a very good possibility that they will do it. They would probably make up some of that money by doing a sales tax, which I, as an Illinois resident, am not a big fan of, because as somebody who works in Missouri, that means I'll pay more for everything in Missouri and won't have the benefit of not having an income tax. Like, it's the worst possible world for me. However, in principle, I'm very much for it. And in fact, long term, this probably would be way after I'm dead that it would take this long. If more and more states start getting rid of the income tax, you know the last ones to do it will be blue states. Well, Missouri is a red state. Then what if Iowa does it? And then what if Kentucky does it? And Indianapolis, or in Indiana? And then maybe last it would be Michigan and or Wisconsin. You surround Illinois with a bunch of states that have no income tax. Well, then you're going to put the pressure on Illinois to also drop income tax. The problem is Illinois is in such horrible financial shape as it is that I'm not sure how they get out of this hole. I mean, they certainly are not looking to reduce taxes right now. I can tell you that. So God bless you in Missouri for looking at something like that. But there was a point that I was saying I didn't quite get to make. And it's because there's so much rattling around in my mind that once I get done with a segment, I should have said that, which is that with the property taxes, the way that Florida's doing it there, as we were talking about, they're being creative in that they're trying to get rid of property taxes, at least for a certain segment of people, which would be the majority of people, even if it's not entirely rid of them because of schools and stuff. They got to take it in steps. And that's probably the way to do it. Because the problem with doing it with the unrealized gains, as we kind of explained there, is that if you decided, okay, we're going to stop taxing houses based on unrealized gains, which I would be a fan of, but practically what that would do is you'd force people to really never move. I mean, unless you absolutely had to for work or some other real life reason, you'd try to never move again. And so the housing market would hurt because people wouldn't have any real upward mobility. Because think about it. If you bought your house in 2005 and your taxes on your house were $1,500 or whatever, well, then they would stay $1,500 until you sold the house and bought a new one. Because the assessed value of that house would be still based on what you paid for it, which is the right way to do it. But it would disincentivize anybody from ever moving. And so you're talking about major, major market disruption to do that, even though it's the actual right thing. Anyway, wanted to throw that in there in addition to my hit on the Mark Cox Morning Show. Always appreciate being able to do that. We'll be right back here on Wiggins America.
And now, an excerpt from The Grocery List, a book by Ryan Wiggins.
I think it's incredible that a grown man would take the time to dress up like a clown, go down to the hospital in a thunderstorm, and stand outside a sick child's window.
The Grocery List, food for thought, by Ryan Wiggins. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk.
Okay, we talked about Iran. We're going to talk about birthright citizenship soon. We got to talk about Pam Bondi, the fired attorney general. We all saw this coming, right? I mean, pretty much a couple months in, you knew, yeah, this ain't going to last. I think the minute I knew this is over, but it still took a long time, was back several months ago when Trump apparently tweeted out or truthed out a post really critical of Pam Bondi, but it was written like it was to her. And people thought, well, this was probably a mistake. Like, he was trying to send a direct message and he accidentally sent a tweet or something like that. Never really heard any more about it. And he said, no, that was on purpose, you know, but we don't know. And ever since then, I've thought her days are numbered. She's just not doing that great. And here's the thing. She has done fine with a lot of things like crime. She has done a great job across the country of bringing down the murder rate and things like that via better law enforcement. And I don't know whether she's directly responsible for that or not, but the numbers don't lie. It's good. Crime in America is down. But the Epstein files and a lot of the bigger picture stuff, like the prosecuting of Obama and James Clapper and Brennan, whatever his first name is, the former head of the CIA under Obama. These people were super despicable people, and they were weaponizing their offices to take down the eventual sitting president of the United States, Trump, in term one. And there's a lot of evidence that is very, very damning for them. And it's just nothing happened. And then the 2020 election and some stuff that Tulsi Gabbard has put out some intelligence on, that it just doesn't seem like much has happened. They're suing all these states for the, and some have just willingly turned it over, the voter data, but some have fought it. And Hans von Spakovsky was on this week and talked about how he thought that was involved in this, but we don't really know. I know one thing though. I know one thing about Pam Bondi. She did not do very good with the Epstein files. But the thing is, neither did Trump. In fact, I would go so far to say that that has been the biggest problem and worst decision of Trump's second term is how to handle the Epstein files. Because he's just so resistant when somebody comes at him that he's like, oh, you're going to be my enemy? Okay, I'm just going to fight you. Like, really, no matter what. And he could have destroyed that narrative before it ever even became a thing. But even then, once it started to, by just saying, I am the anti-deep state president. You know, that's kind of what he got elected on. I'm the one who's the reformer who's going to come in and wipe this slate clean and change everything. And I'm going to release the Epstein files. You didn't have to wait for Congress to pass something for you to do it. You could have just done it. And he didn't. And that's probably because his name was in them. But more than anything, at least from what we have, he's exonerated in them. But I think he went full protection mode and said, I'm not going to release anything because I'm just giving the other side more fodder, just like he would have done with his tax releases. Like he won't do it because it's giving the other side just more reason to criticize him. I think that's what he did with the Epstein files. But it was a miscalculation. Think about it. If he had come out at month two or month five, for that matter, and said, I am the transparency president, I am going to release all the Epstein files, no matter what they say. And you'll see that I'm in them and it'll still exonerate me. You know, if he had done that, the left would have never had a talking point and he would have been that same guy that you elected. But instead, what it looked like was, oh, he's part of the system. Oh, he's an insider. He's protecting these things just the same as everybody else did. That's not to say anything for the left's arguments on them, because they didn't do anything for years until it became about Trump. So it's just totally disingenuous on their part. But Trump missed the mark on that, and so did Bondi, and Bondi was a big part of missing the mark on that. So I don't really blame her for it, but she did screw it up. Ultimately, though, Trump screwed it up. He screwed. That's his one problem that he has now created for himself, in a sense. Because he's going to be going after all this deep state stuff. It's still going to happen. I mean, we're only 15 months into this presidency. This stuff's still going to happen. But it just looks bad now. You don't feel the same about him like he's the outsider. You feel like he's more of an insider. And that's a problem. Now, I'm going to switch gears here. And you know how I'm a big fan of Last Person on Earth movies? And I review them and I give you a suggestion every now and then. Well, here's a weird take on Last Person on Earth involving the news.
The last.
Where is everybody?
The last.
It's not the end of the world.
There's all the time I need and all the time I want.
The last person on Earth.
I miss the noise, you know?
I thought I was
going to
be alone again.
There's time now.
He's been missing from that picture, as is often missing from every picture we show of downtown St. Louis. No people.
Well, you know what? They wanted to look picturesque. You can see a car driving by on the right. That's the only sign of life.
But there's never anybody walking around.
No, there is
in downtown
not.
St.
It's
Louis.
It's not very often. You're right.
It's like, remember the old neutron bomb that wouldn't knock down buildings but just would eliminate all the people? It's like one of those hit St. Louis.
I guess it's just a photo op. People then run and hide, so they're not in the photo.
Did you see what I did there? I took Last Person on Earth, and I made it about the Cardinals in St. Louis. Well, that clip has gone super viral, even with the Annie Fry Show and elsewhere. Obviously, it's not just about us. That clip has really made the rounds, and people kind of fighting over whether it was appropriate for Keith Hernandez and I don't know who the other announcer's name was, of the Mets to be saying that about St. Louis while they're in St. Louis. I actually don't care at all. I don't know if I'm among the minority or the majority in that, but when I heard it, I was like, man, that's pretty spot on. But the reason that I got to play it for Last Person on Earth is that he is talking in there about neutron bombs going off and stuff that I don't know much about. Is there a neutron bomb that kills just people and leaves buildings? Maybe so. I just don't know much about that. But regardless, that has definitely been a news item this week, and it's just funny that I got to play it with the Last Person on Earth intro. If you ever want to know more about my fascination with Last Person on Earth movies and TV shows, they have to hit one of three criteria, which that kind of did. I mean, not quite. I mean, I'm making a joke here, but they have to hit one of three criteria. The first one is that it has to be a movie or a TV show, a story about the actual last person on Earth or a Earth-like place where they are alone. Or it has to be about a person or group of people that are the last humans in the universe, even if they're not on Earth, like they're in a cryo chamber being flown through space or something like that. Or the last one, and that's the one that Keith Hernandez clip just hit, there has to be an environment where there should be people, but for some mysterious reason, there are not. Usually that is a city, and there's just no people in it. I love that kind of stuff. I love that in storytelling and in general, and that's why I've made it a big thing here on this show. All right, we're going to take a short break and be right back with more about birthright citizenship. I think that will have done it. We will have hit basically every major news item this week here going into Easter. Stick around. We'll be right back. And I mentioned this already, but I'll say it again. The Iran story, domestically, it affects us in basically one way, at least immediately. Long term, obviously, they can't have a nuclear bomb. They're insane. But they also do lots of other things that aren't nuclear. They set off bombs and shoot rockets at not necessarily us, which is why people argue America first, we shouldn't be involved. And that's fair. But they do fund terror all over the world, including here. And so that does affect us. But let me, you know, back up from what I'm saying. Short term, really the only way that we would be talking about Iran, even if we were bombing them actively all the time, is through gas prices. I mean, that's the main way that it is affecting us. And highlighted that in the first segment. I didn't want to get too much into it. But that's the other main news story. This is birthright citizenship. That is a huge, huge news story this week because it will impact so much of our lives. This will impact a lot of the way that America runs and a lot of the programs that America funds internally. Things like, I mean, average stuff like Social Security and Medicare and stuff like that. You know, these programs will go bankrupt unless they are reformed. And birthright citizenship is a major way that they could be reformed outside of Congress or the president or legislature. If the Supreme Court decides that the 14th Amendment, the way that it is written, means that just if you have a baby in the United States, regardless of who you are, that child is already a subject of the United States and therefore a citizen of the United States. Of course, the key phrase in the 14th Amendment is not that a child was born here, but is subject to the jurisdiction thereof. You're going to hear that quote a lot. Probably have this week if you've been paying attention to it. I paid a very close attention to this case because it will have a major impact on not just the things that I already listed, the programs, the social programs, but it'll have a major impact on the power structure in the United States. Because if people born here to foreign nationals are not then for now on considered citizens, that will probably have major political ramifications for even what we call a citizen and how we reallocate congressional seats, how we allocate electoral college votes. All of the above will be involved in that. And it's all downstream from this, but it starts with this. So it's kind of a big deal. And I watched very closely the Supreme Court this week to see what the justices were saying, because you can kind of, they tip their hand a little bit, and it's never the ones that, it's never the three on the left, although once in a while Kagan will cross over. Even Sotomayor crossed over on one of the cases, the Colorado conversion therapy case this week. That's very rare. But for the most part, you got the three on the left, you got two to three on the right, if you include Gorsuch. Kavanaugh is kind of getting there, actually. In his very early days, he was a little bit of a wild card, but I think he's becoming very reliably constitutional conservative, you could call it that. So let's say you got four on the right and three on the left. Well, then you're left with Gorsuch is a wild card sometimes, too, but that's more because he interprets strictly the Constitution. And in a case like this, I just don't see him being a surprise. So you got Amy Coney Barrett and John Roberts, the Chief Justice, that end up being your decider most of the time. And I have a suspicion that John Roberts reads the room and just goes with whatever's going to win. I don't think that he's an actual swing vote. I think he's more of a stick his finger into the wind and see which way it's blowing vote. Because he is there to, quote, protect the sanctity of the court more than anything. That's my opinion. That's my view. Anyway, having said that, I listened to the oral arguments concerning Amy Coney Barrett and John Roberts most closely, and they did not sound good. They sounded like this was going to end up being a 5-4 in the direction of the left, that they were going to uphold birthright citizenship the way it is now, which I don't need to mention all this. I'm going to mention one case that now Chinese nationals are flying over either right before they have a baby, or they're doing it through surrogates. And they're not even always flying into California. Sometimes they're flying into like some Pacific island that we are, is a territory of the United States, having a baby there and going back home. Don't even set foot here. And then their child has U.S. citizenship for the rest of their life. but they have full allegiance to China. And so this is a program that is producing tens of thousands of new U.S. citizens who have never and may never actually come here who are allegiant to their country. And this is a major, major concern. And Justice Alito, so this oral argument's been going on for a few days. The first day didn't sound good to me for the middle two judges. But Alito made this argument on the second day. This would have been, I guess, Thursday. And I thought, my goodness, that's a great argument. And I would have never really put it that way or thought of it that way. But I cut it, and I want you to hear it. And if you're a middle justice, if you're on the left, you're not going to care. You're going to vote the way you're going to vote. But if you're a middle justice, I can't imagine hearing this and it not swaying you a little bit.
Wiggins America.
Not subject to any foreign power is pretty straightforward. So let me give you these examples. A boy is born here to an Iranian father who has entered the country illegally. That boy is automatically an Iranian national at birth, and he has a duty to provide military service to the Iranian government. Is he not subject to any foreign power?
Not within the meaning of the 1866 Act, Justice Alito. And that's clear from Wong Kim Ark, and it's clear from the debates. What the framers meant by the phrase not subject to any foreign power was referring to the ambassador exception. If it meant what the government contends, basically not a subject of any foreign power, that another country considers you a jus sanguinis citizen, then lawful permanent residents, all foreign nationals.
Well, ordinary public meaning of that would certainly encompass that boy, would it not?
Justice Alito, if you think that the language of the 1866 Act was ambiguous, as Wong Kim Ark says, the shift to the language of the 14th Amendment, which is the operative text, certainly clears up any ambiguity.
Well, what I said about a boy born to an Iranian father is true of children born here to parents who are nationals of other countries. If I'm correct, it's true to a child who's born here to Russian parents. It's true to a child who's born here to Mexican parents. They're automatically citizens or nationals of those countries and have a duty of military service. It sure seems like that makes them subject to a foreign power.
Yeah, we've created a system that produces military allegiance to other countries while being a citizen of the United States. Now, I don't know about you, but that phrase, subject to the jurisdiction thereof in the 14th Amendment, it ain't applying to some kid who's born and has full military allegiance to somebody else. That is a great argument from Justice Alito, and I will continue to bring you more of that as I find it. I don't know that oral arguments will go much longer, but I thought that was fantastic. So hopefully, somebody in the room is going to get some sense about him. And my hope is that person is Amy Coney Barrett. Because Justice Roberts, he looks like he's gone. He long gone. Justice Amy Coney Barrett could be the decider. And that's a strong argument to pull her over to that side. This is Wiggins America. Thanks for tuning in this week. We will see you next week.